today. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Fred Kona. I am the chairperson of this portfolio committee on mineral resources. Next to me is
Ayanda Boss, acting committee secretary.
Over to you, honorable member.
My name is Rose Sonto, a member of the committee.
Faith Bikani, I'm also a member of the committee.
Nomuise Longele, member of the committee.
Eric Jenkins, member of the committee.
Sponsene Ngobo, committee researcher.
Diego Webb, secretary to the chairperson.
Julian Hendrik Sabinet.
Let's come back to this side. Over to you, sir.
Good morning. I'm Michael Weber, also Chief Director of Mineral Regulation from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Musa Mabuza from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Morning. My name is Nia Dwesim Chumori from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Nixie Sufi from the Chamber of Mines.
Good morning, members. My name is Loli Tileza. I'm the chief executive of the Chamber of Mines, and I want to record the apology with Stephen Mdau, who is our advisor on environment, had to turn at the airport because her brother passed away.
Well, Wendell Little for Reuters News Agency.
Nick Piper, PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Andre Adam from SABC.
Morning, Somerset Lamini from the Chamber of Mines.
Michael Sons Lamini with the DMR.
Jeremy Michaels, Department of Mineral Resources.
Thank you very much. Please, Chamber of Mines, can you pass our condolences to Steve? It's not good news indeed. And it happens at a time when nobody, you know, expects we grieve with him in this situation. Honorable members, we do have apologies. Honorable Matibela and Honorable Moss are going to join us later. Honorable Matibela is busy, has got a doctor's appointment. Honorable Moss is handling a matter with the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry. And the other apologies, can you go through?
We've got apologies for Mr. Charlie, Mr. Makagula, Mr. Gololo, Mr. Mare, and Mr. Smith. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In welcoming all of us, today's agenda is going to be that you are going to be addressed by the Department of Mineral Resources on the outstanding matters pertaining to the rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines. This is as a result of the report from the Auditor General, which was highly critical of the work done so far in rehabilitating such ownerless and derelict mines. In the last meeting we had with the department pertaining this issue, they have taken us through their planning stages in terms of the recommendations and the findings of the Auditor General, and that they were still working on the action plan to implement those strategic approaches, including a call by the Auditor General that let there be a strategy to then deal with these ownerless and derelict mines. The Auditor General report indicates that there are more than 5,000 mines, closer to 6,000, in fact it's 5,900 something mines that are said to be ownerless and derelict. And that was confirmed by the department. They will also let us know if that is still the case or the number has changed. And also within that report, we did pick up that quite a mammoth task that it would cost. The estimations at the time were around 30 million rand. So the department therefore will take us through those action plans and clarify, re-clarify some of the issues raised by the Auditor General. I must say that the matter came to our attention when it was published to media in December 2009, where the Auditor General was highly critical of the situation of the ownerless and derelict mines, the impact of those unrehabilitated mines in terms of the environment, water pollution, and also possibilities of exposure of the citizenship who reside in the close proximity of those ownerless and derelict mines in terms of them contracting occupationally related diseases, even though they are not working in the mine. So we would then listen to the department. But also, after the department has addressed us and we have engaged with their submission, we have requested the Chamber of Mines as well to also come and take us into their confidence in terms of what role do they play in this entire process of the rehabilitation of this ownerless and derelict mine. And indeed, after that presentation, we'll engage and take the appropriate decisions in terms of the way forward. So, over to you, DMR.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. As Honorable Chair indicated, we are back to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Mining to present the challenging task of rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines. We believe, the Honorable Members, that unless we constantly create the context within which the derelict and ownerless mines exist, and so that the implementation plan and all other initiatives that we put before you for your consideration are placed within that context of the creation of the derelict and ownerless mines and the challenges that are inherent thereof. In our presentation, our outline, we will seek to create that context in terms of the mining heritage and look at the legislative provisions that prevailed at the time and the evolution of legislation to where we are today. We'll look at two critical pieces of legislation as it relates to rehabilitation and environmental issues and the impact thereof. And then we'll look internally within the department at existing programs on rehabilitation of DNO, and we'll give you a status, the current status, and we'll get into the implementation plan as we see it, and then we'll conclude. Just by way of background, Honorable Members, you would appreciate that the mining industry is the backbone of the economic formulation of South Africa as we see it today, even if it has been in existence for over 100 years. And we believe, as a department, that mining is going to take place for another 100 years plus in the future. And therefore, it is absolutely important, in our view, that the way that we engage on the mining and mining-related issues seeks to ensure that we create an environment that will sustain the existence of the mining industry and its significance in terms of its contribution to economic growth, job creation, and other things. organized mining in South Africa started immediately after the discovery of gold and immediately afterward the diamonds in the West Basin and the alluvial diamonds in the respectively in the latter part of the 1800s. So we've been mining, honorable members, for over 100 years, as you know. The second point that we are attaching there is the mining structure, and we'll explain what we mean by the mining structure. As you know, before the promulgation of the MPRDA, the mining rights vested in the hands of private individuals. And so for anybody to mine, an investor needed to locate the holder of the mineral right, negotiate with the landowner, and based on the agreement that they reach among themselves as investors and the private mineral rights owners, they will then engage on the development of a mine where state had very little involvement. And why we put this up is because for over this, for the period of 100 years, the ownership, the database of the ownership of those who have been operating mines will not be readily available because it had not been managed by the state. Of course, there are cases where we know those who have been mining. So we're creating that as part of the context. And unfortunately, again, given the environment at the time, as we know it, this is pre the principles of sustainable development. The focus has been on the economic sphere of sustainable development. Unfortunately, issues of social as well as environmental issues did not constitute part of the basket as it relates to mining at the time. But you would also appreciate that as a country that has been evolving, we were at some stage a federal state, and so the laws and legislations that were made were modeled around the provinces or the federal state, and were also focused on certain commodities. For example, the focus would be on precious metals and minerals, and everything else wasn't as important as we are seeing it today. And those are just some of the examples of the laws that prevailed at the time, you know, from the 1908 through to the 1960s, and the period I'm looking at here is up to 1991, and then the interface between 1991 and 2004. And so these different pieces of legislation within one country, but because of the fragmentation thereof, were applicable per region and were therefore not consistent. And they created, to a large extent, the problems that we have. South Africa was unified as one country only in 1961. And so post-1961, at least we became one country, and therefore the mineral laws that we then had post-1961 would be applicable throughout the country. The issue of sustainable development, as we understand it today, only became a cliche leading up to the first Mining and Environment Summit, the Rio de Janeiro Summit, in 1991. And so there was a lot of work that was leading up to this commission in 1991, and this particular commission was focused on mining. And so there were lots of issues that revolved around mining as they pertain to sustainable development. So after mining for 100 years, only leading up to 1991, did we start looking at other spheres of sustainable development beyond the economic gain. Only then did we begin to look at issues of social impact as well as the environmental impact. And of course, for us in South Africa, 1991 was the leading up to the democratic dispensation. And so a lot of activities at that time were concentrated around us establishing the democracy that we enjoy today. But what is quite interesting for us is that the Rio de Janeiro Sustainable Development Commission also coincided with the implementation of the Minerals Act 50 of 1991 as received. If you allow me to go back a little bit, honorable members, only in 1967 did we start having any legislation put in place that talked to environmental issues, mine closure in particular. And the requirement at that time was that if you abandon a mine, you put up a fence, just a small fence around the mine. And that was the idea of closure. And so we are pleading, honorable members, that you understand that there has been a legislation vacuum for an extended period of time. And of course, the environment within which mining took place at the time was completely different to the way that we are looking at mining today in the context of sustainable development. And therefore, it was inevitable that we would end up with a situation that we have inherited today as this government. In 1991, we're looking at the impact of the Minerals Act 50 of 1991 as it pertains to environment. This is the first time that our legislation started introducing stringent measures on the environmental requirement. We make an observation with the first bullet there that leading up to the introduction and the implementation of this Minerals Act, the asbestos operators realized that they could not survive within that legislative framework. And so all of them closed down before this act was put in place. And so that again shows how legislation can be a powerful tool and direct behavior in the manner that is desired by the collective. Unfortunately, the closing down of the asbestos mine did not necessarily help in terms of the impact that these mines would have, because they were closing these mines under a legislation that did not require any stringent environmental closure mechanisms. The significance of this Mineral Act is that it, for South Africa, provided a basis for a more integrated and efficient environmental management. It was only in this act that the state required that the miners have the environmental management program, and it was this piece of legislation that started to seek the operators of mine to make financial provisions for rehabilitation, only in 1991. And so, and I did mention that the state was not necessarily directly involved with the management of the mining industry. It was the business of the investor and those who held mineral rights. And so only in 1991 did this piece of legislation introduce the requirement for authorization, and so state then became actively involved. Because then everybody had to submit their environmental management program for authorization. Everybody who was operational at the time. So if you were not operational and you had closed your mines any time before then. This piece of legislation also introduced the need for consultation with interested and affected parties. So it was effectively a paradigm shift for South Africa as we see the mining industry in the context of sustainable development. And so the conversation that we are having today, we only started creating an environment in 1991 after mining for over 100 years, where we can begin to look at sustainable development in the mining context. Only with the introduction of the MPRDA of 2002 did we really start introducing the sustainable development approach to mining, which seeks to achieve a balance among all the three spheres of sustainable development. Namely, the MPRDA provides for the social license to operate, and so operators have to demonstrate and sign effectively a social contract that you cannot just come in and operate. That's the first one. The second one, of course, is that the MPRDA focused on issues of economic growth, that how can we attract investment and diversify our mineral basket from just coal and gold, as it were, to a range of other minerals. As you know, today, the PGMs are a significant contributor in the basket of minerals that we are mining as a country. But more importantly, and in the context of today's discussion, the third tier of the MPRDA pertains to the environmental sphere of sustainable development, and it introduced stringent requirements for all operators. This includes a detailed environmental program, as well as the conducting an environmental impact assessment, which forms the basis for a mining right to be issued. So the department and this government is actively involved in driving that behavior. It seeks to have the participation of affected parties, public participation. It requires determination for the quantum of financial provision, and the applicant must have a mine closure plan, and it makes provision for constant monitoring of the performance as it relates to the environmental management plan. And so effectively, honorable members, the last point there is that one cannot begin to overstate the tensions between development and the environment in the context of what has just been outlined, resultant from a vacuum of legislation and as it relates to social, you know, incorporating the social and the environmental issues. That provides the context within which we are going to present our implementation today, honorable members. We also thought that we would demonstrate to you what the department has been doing since the turn of this millennium. The programs on environmental management and rehabilitation within the department. It was only early in 2000 that we initiated a research program on derelict and ownerless mines. It was also during this time that we started piloting the rehabilitation program within the department. And I cannot overemphasize the capacity constraints in terms of resources, the funding, and the human resources capital. And you would also appreciate that this happened at the time when a lot of work within the department was focused on changing and creating a regulatory framework that we are currently operating within. And so, but even during that time, the department created this pilot program on rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines. This pilot project was to a large extent informed by the risk as it were presented by the asbestos mine. You may recall that there was a lot of talk at the time and a lot of activity and litigation on the effect of asbestos on health of the workers in those mines, those who worked in those mines, as well as the communities surrounding the asbestos operations at the time. Through this work that we have been doing, we then developed and focused on developing the database of derelict and ownerless mines. Because we then recognized that for us to begin to deal with the derelict and ownerless mines, we need to understand the extent to which we are exposed to this problem. And so it was around the early 2000s that the work started on now tracking all these derelict and ownerless mines, and the figure that the chair alluded to earlier is the culmination of the work of the department as it sought to understand what the problem and the extent of the problem was. And through this work, and Chair alluded to this, and this is by no means a conclusive figure of the required amount, but it's a baseline estimate that we managed to get to in 2005, I think it was, through the research program, that we would require a minimum of 30 billion rand for us to address holistically all the issues pertaining to derelict and ownerless mines. At the same time, or during this period, we also recognized that this is not a problem that can only be resolved by the Department of Mineral Resources. It is a problem that requires for us in government to work together as affected departments. And during this time, the department led the establishment of the government task team on environmental issues, GTT as it is abbreviated, and it's constituted and chaired by the DMR. It continues to exist and serve today. And also at the time, the Department of Water Affairs, as well as Department of Science and Technology. It was also during this time that the department motivated and obtained approval for the pumping of extraneous mine water in the Vex Basin, recognizing through the research work the extent of the problem that the country would be subjected to if we do absolutely nothing. What have we done to date or recently in the context of the Auditor General's report, as it highlighted some of the challenges within the department? As of December 2009, the National Strategy on Derelict and Ownerless Mines was approved by our minister in December 2009. I did allude to the human resources capacity constraint that were dedicated to dealing with this mammoth task of derelict and ownerless mines within the department. Recognizing this, the department also established the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee. This oversight committee is a transitional structure which is constituted by the various units within the department. It's chaired by Mineral Policy and Promotion, but serving on this committee are Mineral Regulation colleagues, Mine Health and Safety colleagues, finance colleagues, their financial implications, the audit, compliance and audit colleagues, to ensure that the oversight committee in serving and executing the work of translating the national strategy on derelict and ownerless mines, it can secure the right kind of resources that will enable it to do its job and execute its mandate.
To date, the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee, in its transitional form, has been able to establish the implementation plan as we will put before you, honorable members. This committee has submitted motivation to the minister to approve the permanent structure on the environmental management, the broad environmental management issues pertaining to mining, and that structure would include dedicated resources on the derelict and ownerless mines. The minister has approved the creation of this structure, and through the process of transition, as the department split effectively on the 1st of April, this structure remains one of our key priority areas to ensure that we have created adequate resources to focus on derelict and ownerless mines and the rehabilitation thereof. I indicated, honorable members, that we initiated the research and development project. This research and development program has helped us as the department to understand the complexity of the environmental issues and its the impact of DNO on the environment. And as we continue with this research, this picture is becoming clearer and clearer to us, and we would continue engaging this research and development as and when we'll run it concurrent with the implementation plan. The database of approximately 6,000 sites of abandoned derelict and ownerless mines is not a fixed figure by any means. It changes constantly. And in our implementation plan, we want to make sure that we are constantly monitoring and evaluating this database and ensuring that we keep this figure going one way, that is downwards. As you would appreciate, the resources that we have, we would not be able to rehabilitate all of these sites alone and all at the same time. And so we then proposed an approach of ranking these sites. And the ranking is based on health, safety, and environmental impact, all of them together. Because you cannot just look at one when you are ranking the priority. You've got to say the impact as it relates to the health, safety, and environment, and we've already determined the criteria that we used to prioritize the 6,000 sites. Key, obviously, is the proximity of the identified sites to communities and human settlement. There are many of these sites that are very close to communities, and one cannot underestimate the impact that these sites have on the community, and it is an issue that is of absolute priority to us as we go through the ranking. We've included what we call residual deposits there, in that having indicated that mining has been taking place for over 100 years, you would also appreciate that there has been evolution of technology for mining and extraction of minerals. So many of these abandoned sites were abandoned with minimal extraction of minerals. So the dumps that some of the mine dumps still have huge residual potential with the application of recent technology. And so we are saying that if we are able then to attract investors who will develop those mines, and in the process of them coming in to develop those mines, they would then also take part of the responsibility of rehabilitating those sites. So that is part of our implementation plan going forward. Of course, the issue of acid mine drainage is one of the key criteria that we use to prioritize the site. You know, does the abandoned site have the potential to create acid mine drainage problems for us? And if it does, you know, then it will be high on the priority, and it will rank very highly. Subsidence pertains largely to coal. I'm sure that members know that particularly in the Emalahleni area, you can see quite an extensive piece of land that has subsided, and you know, the use of that land for anything, it renders that all of that land sterile for any other use. You can't develop on that land, you can't use it for agricultural purposes, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, part of the solutions going forward is for us to begin to appreciate how we can mitigate against one, further subsidence, but also rehabilitate, and what programs can we apply to rehabilitate the affected land. Again, in relation to coal, we look at spontaneous combustion and what impact it can have on the health, safety and environment to prioritize. But we also look at the environmental impact. And by environmental impact, we talk about surface water pollution, air pollution, as well as potential for groundwater pollution. So using all of these criteria, which we have used and we are continuing to use in our implementation plan, honorable members, we have ranked, we have started to rank abandoned these derelict and ownerless mines. And we have come to a figure of 154 very high priority sites. And out of these 154 priority sites, 54 are asbestos, and they are spread in the following provinces: in Limpopo, in the Northern Cape, as well as the Northwest provinces. We also have prioritized a further 100 sites for gold, coal, as well as, we call it other, because it may not necessarily be a specific commodity, but it could be posing a risk because it is a hole of any site close to a community, like we have experienced, I think, a year or two ago with a young child drowning in the Limpopo area in an abandoned site that was covered with water after we experienced floods in those areas. And so, you know, already in that particular case, you cannot say, is it this commodity or that commodity, but would look at all the criteria, and based on what we identify as high risk, we would then include in the high ranking of these sites. And part of the 100 includes such sites which are independent of the commodity we are looking at. In respect of gold, it's obviously the Gauteng province, the Free State, the Northwest, as well as the Limpopo province. Coal is in Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. Honorable members, we've outlined the environment within which many of these derelict and ownerless mines we have inherited. We've outlined what that environment was like. So a state, we did not have and still continue not to have a readily available database of who these owners are. We know some of them, but we don't know all of them. And as part of our implementation plan, we've made it our priority to begin to embark on the process of tracking some of the prior owners of these sites, so that they can be held to account. It is our plan, honorable members, to also evaluate the legislative provisions that will complement our mitigation mechanism against the scourge of the derelict and ownerless mines to our environment and our people. 30 billion rand as a baseline estimate is a huge figure. I'm sure, honorable members, you know that as government alone, we would not be in a position to budget 30 billion rand to effect the rehabilitation program as we understand it today. And so part of our implementation plan in the short term is to identify the mechanisms that we could apply to fund this program. But we are also seeking partnership with key stakeholders. And we have our stakeholders in the mining industry that we have a track record of working collaboratively with to resolve the challenges that may seem insurmountable. And collaboratively, we have been able to, in many a times, to find solutions and everlasting solutions. In conclusion, honorable members, we recognize as the department the magnitude of the challenge that lies before us, all of us as the country. This problem cannot be resolved by the Department of Mineral Resources alone. We are the custodian of the mining industry. We appreciate that and we take our responsibility very seriously, but we also need to be working collaboratively with our stakeholders, with other establishments of government to work on finding permanent solutions. DNO cannot be business as usual. It requires us to be more innovative. On a closing note, we also believe that the rehabilitation program also presents the opportunity for us to create the much-needed jobs, particularly because many of these abandoned sites are in what has become ghost towns, in rural areas. So the programs that we will be embarking on collaboratively also present opportunities for us while we are resolving the challenge as we see it on the environmental issues, but it can also create jobs. It is part of our implementation plan to say that we need to move and we need to move with speed, but there are also these benefits that we see that will be presented by this challenge. With those few words, honorable members, we thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. If there are no additions from your team, we will then open the floor for the honorable members to engage with your submissions. Are there any additions? Not at this stage. Okay. Honorable members, there you have the presentation by Mineral Resources. Over to you. Honorable Lucas.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of the things that we do consider as a committee, this is a mammoth task because it has a lot of history to it. And when mining began in this country, there weren't these laws. The land, once you had the rights for the land, you automatically had the mineral rights. If it was discovered, so you continued. So there was no check and balances. I do know, I think I should mention this again, there was a very good experiment in KwaZulu-Natal, the Richards Bay Minerals, where rehabilitation went, as they were mining, they were rehabilitating the place. And I think it's a good example, and I think this is one of the things that we should keep in our heads all the time when granting the mineral rights. However, I'm really concerned that it's going to be difficult to find these way back. It means that when the department goes back and finds something there, and those owners will appear and say, well, this was my right, I have his right. What's going to happen to those people? Will they be able to reclaim after disappearing all these years? Or, it's just a question because one needs to have clarity. The other sad part is that now, when the South African scenario has changed, where we all have the right and ability to go into mining and that, the laws appear to be stringent now. And it makes difficulty because there's all these other issues that were neglected in the past have become apparent. It must be done. And we appreciate this. But I must just say that it's not making it easier for the historically disadvantaged people to enter. We got to play the game at the same level, and we appreciate it, and we environmentally conscious of the situation. So I really find the difficulty in the way forward, because the derelict mines and ownerless mines are going to be around our necks for many, many years to come. And the poor people that went were there and employed, and the people abandoned the place, and there was no, it's not sustainable. And we hope that the lesson can be learned that when people get mining rights, they must have something in place that will guarantee that the people that of that place will benefit from the mining of that area. So it's important that the communities in the area will benefit from what has been, of whatever mining that has taken place.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bigani.
No, thanks for the presentation. I think it was a mouthful, very enlightening. But work has to be done at the end of the day. So what I'd like to know, Chair, is quite a few issues. We have the history. Where we come from, we have the gap. But now we have a department of DMR. There are expectations. There's a budget also allocated in terms of what needs to happen with DMR. What I'm interested in knowing is for this, based on the 30 billion that you're talking about, did you receive, in terms of the DMR budget, has any amount at all been allocated for the rehabilitation of mine? But also of my concern is what's in the AG's report in terms of recommendations when it's still DME, where one of the recommendations was that there should be a national strategy by March 2008, I think, or 9, I think it's 2008, there was supposed to have been a national strategy that has been submitted. In fact, that recommendation that it should have happened. Has that eventually happened? And if so, how much of that has been implemented? I don't know, perhaps, Chair, because I'm serving in different committees, it's possible that a presentation has been made. But if briefly we can get an idea of how far is that now presently. Then the other question is that I think in terms of your MPRD Act, for a closure of mines, apparently you have to issue a certificate. Now, in that process of issuing that certificate, what follow-ups are made to ensure accountability? Or how strict are you? How compliant are you in terms of applying the relevant punishment to people who don't comply? And if you do actually have a situation with trade people, what happens to them? Because you don't hear anything as to is there any history of a particular relevant number of people having been traced? Then, Chair, has DMR ever come to a point of perhaps, because I think we indicated a little bit on this public-private relations, to to what extent do you prioritize public-private relations? Because I think if we're at a point where we say we are still establishing ourselves and we are still perhaps under discussions on state-owned mines and ourselves, we basically nowhere as yet. Now, to what extent are you thinking of promoting the public-private relationships between yourselves and whatever private partners to try and improve relations for the sake of having some of these issues actually resolved in terms of the rehabilitation of mines? And you talk about, there's something about the abandonment of database. Do you have statistics in terms of those mines that you, where you've actually been able to trace the owners? Is there anything whatsoever based on that since you've been established, particularly as possibly as DME and eventually DMR? Because I think if you're going to be already talking of figures of plus minus 6,000 of mines detected, and there's nothing actually being indicated in terms of assisting us, in terms of holding those who are supposed to be held liable, accountable for these mines, then I think movement would rather be very slow, and it wouldn't be really giving direction as to how we're being received. And then in terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act, your relations there and the issue of asbestos mines, there's a lot attached to that in terms of sustainable development, the livelihoods of people. What exactly is happening in that area? Because I think there were issues where we raised with mine health and safety, especially considering the fact that they were actually reviewing their legislation, that stringent measures need to be taken to improve the situation of these ex-asbestos mines. Nothing much is also being heard about that. How far is the process? I think for now I'll stop there, Chair.
You, Honorable Sondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will also thank the department for the presentation. I must say that it's 5 months now since the national strategy has been approved, which is not much of the time. But one needs to know, in and around rehabilitation, given the Limpopo child experience, what is being done by this oversight committee, together with the department, to educate and involve the affected parties and the adjacent communities in this process and program of rehabilitating mines. That is one. The second one is that we're talking about rehabilitating abandoned and derelict mines. One needs to look at, we are doing that because those mines are ownerless. We know some of those people, we don't know some of those people, and therefore the state has to take that responsibility onto its shoulders. What preventive measures are being taken on the currently operating mines, so that we do not have a recurring process of rehabilitating mines should they be out of use? The third one, that we know some of these people, I think we would be interested to know when they are called to account, what does that mean? What does that involve? Called to account, In which way? Let me stop there.
Just one more, Chair. Based on an Auditor General's report that I saw, and I'm interested in an answer with that, because it was still something apparently that was within DME, where of asbestos mines at national level, and was solely responsible for overseeing bids, tender documents, evaluations, site inspections, payments, administration, and project meeting attendance of all the rehabilitation projects. That doesn't sound nice. It doesn't sound realistic that anything could have developed from there. I'm just interested in knowing, because they complain somewhere along the line about lack of capacity and not getting the relevant support in terms of rehabilitation of mines in government. But how are such a situation allowed also? Just to hear where DMR is with this, because it does sound like things went terribly wrong. And as a result, there's a village also mentioned, Yenang Flake, was apparently an asbestos mine. What's happening with it? Because it was an Auditor General's requirement and recommendation that something be done in that area. Thank you, Chair.
Let's allow you an opportunity to respond to those, and then we will come back.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Members, and thank you for the valuable input indeed. One of the things that we perhaps should, as a country, pride ourselves with is the Richards Bay model of concurrent rehabilitation. I think, if I recall, it is still the world's best case study, and that those who are learning mine environment here in South Africa and elsewhere are being taught about how mining and environment can coexist. The Richards Bay example is used as a case study to that effect, and it gives us hope. And perhaps I agree completely, Honorable Lucas, that it is an area that we've got to look at, see if it's doable in other minerals. You know, of course, every mineral is different. The technology and the mining methods will be different. You know, can it be done? But it's one of those areas where perhaps we haven't worked as closely as we should with business in particular as partners to explore, you know, the expansion of that model in other areas, and we take it at heart as one of the areas that we need to develop going forward, especially since we keep saying that we've been mining for 100 years and we want to mine for another 100 plus years. And it's possible for us to mine for another 100 years plus. You know, just 2 weeks ago, the Citigroup released a report stating that South Africa is the wealthiest mining jurisdiction in the world, followed by Russia and Australia, a distant third. That, for us, is encouraging. That even the international community is beginning to see the value of mining in South Africa, and that we will continue, and we believe that the potential, those who have been saying, including in South Africa, that mining is a sunset industry, have got to think again. Mining is still a sunrise industry, and therefore it's important that issues of environment are looked at within the rightful context. The difficulty of tracing owners cannot be overstated, Honorable Lucas, indeed. But it's one of the options. We're not saying we're going on our way out to go and track every single owner, and if we can't, or can, you know, if we can't find them, then what? We cannot wait when we have, say, acid mine drainage and environmental impact with our surface water and groundwater. We are a water scarce country. You know, can we afford to be polluting this very limited water that we need for survival through a very important contributor to our economic growth, such as the mining industry? And the answer is no. And therefore, that's why we are looking for solutions that will not necessarily be the solutions of the DMR, but in partnership with our stakeholders. And they are presenting a little bit later. I'm sure that some of them are presenting, they're not representing all of the stakeholders. But I'm sure that in when we invite them, you know, to play a partnership role in resolving this challenge that faces all of us, and we seek to protect that going forward. It is unfortunate for the latecomers in the industry, Honorable Lucas, but I'm sure you appreciate how important it is that we cannot say, let's make the rules a little bit easier for the SDSA because they came in late. The rules have to be the same. Honorable Zikani, thank you very much. Yes, we have the history, we've identified the gaps. We've got an idea of 30 billion, but that 30 billion is not necessarily the budget that is required from the department, as we had indicated. It's a total cost of rehabilitating DLO mines. We had an allocation of 52 million rand. In this financial year, every year for the MTEF. Just to give you an idea, rehabilitating a site could range anything up to hundreds of millions of rand. One site, the Namakwaland alluvial operations, for example. The rehabilitation budget is in order of in excess of 400 million rand. Just one side. And it can be more, but sometimes it can be less. You know, it can be 5 million rand to rehabilitate a site, but it can range up to hundreds of millions. So you can't just therefore say, with these 50 million, I will be able to do 10 sites. You may very well do 10 sites, but you may just scratch the surface. So then it becomes part of that work that we are doing, so that we have a proper understanding, and as part of our criteria as well, is the issue of the affordability. You know, are we able to do something to mitigate the alone, in partnership, and so on. So it's quite a complex it's quite a complex environment that, but by no means insurmountable. As I indicated, we continue with the research work. For example, one of the things that we are doing now is we are constructing a canal in Florida, the Florida Canal in Johannesburg. And that canal is constructed so that it can divert surface water from entering the old underground gold operations in the West Basin. As far as I'm informed, there were how many millions of liters of water seeping into the underground before the construction of the canal. So these are some of the solutions that we are bringing. You know that you don't have to go back and refill those holes. But we can divert that water so that it flows into the surface channels, just as one example. But there are many other interventions that we have in place that are directed towards mitigating against this issue of DNO. In the presentation, Honorable Bikani, I did say that the national strategy was approved in December, and so that question of the Auditor General has fortunately been dealt with. The issue of closure of mines in the MPRDA, how strict are we? We don't take it very lightly. We we don't take it very lightly at all because we understand that we cannot afford to have, or for the generations to come. come to have another phase of derelict and ownerless mines. Because that's effectively what it means. That what we're looking at today is pre-2002. And so, you know, that figure of 6,000 should be going down, not going up. Because everything that is currently operational, the mine closure plan, they've got to make sure, and we make absolutely sure that before we issue that closure certificate, all is complied with. Public-private relations, one of the things that I constantly alluded to in the presentation is that we're seeking partnerships. We're still seeking, unfortunately. We recognize and we have learned that, for example, our key stakeholder, and we know that one of our key stakeholders here represented is doing a lot of work independently. And we are also doing a lot of work independently. And you can already see, and we have had a preliminary conversation with our stakeholder that we need to find each other because the impact would be much higher. And we are in agreement there. We just haven't worked out the modalities yet. But we value the public-private partnerships, and we see as part of our implementation plan as one of those areas that we're going to focus on. The database is there. Our owners traceable, not readily traceable. As I said, you know, people just used to mine. For example, the law did not require any authorization for what is called base metals at the time. So if we're extracting base metals, you could just open your mine and start mining them without government knowing under the previous legislation. And that includes coal, by the way. So coal was classified as a base metal. So you could just come in and start mining, and if you feel I have mined enough, I've made my money, I leave that hole and go away. So these people are not readily traceable. But we will be embarking on trying to trace some of them. But at the same time, we've got to be addressing the challenge because the issue of environmental degradation will not be waiting for us to be tracing those who are operating. Mine health and safety. I know that our mine health and safety colleagues have a dedicated budget to research and development as well on a number of issues, dust, among others, the impact of dust on the currently operating mines. But you, as part of their research as well, they're also assisting with the asbestos. The amendments of the mine health and safety, I believe, will be tabled during this financial year. I believe we have submitted that. I can verify that, Honorable Member. The issue of one official dedicated, that's spot on. And that's why earlier I alluded to the constraints. That's why I alluded to the constraints earlier of human and financial capacity within the department, which led to the establishment of this ROC, because the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee was put in place as part of ensuring that we create some capacity, but that's an interim measure. And the minister has approved the new structure so that we have dedicated structure to do that. It is quite unfortunate, Honorable Member, that we had one official. We were limited in terms of constraints. And yes, DNO is very important, but we also, you know, we're coming in with the promulgation of the new law and ensuring that we put in place systems and mechanisms that would manage the transition from the old regulatory environment to the one that is currently in place. It is indeed not an excuse at all, but our intervention is ensuring that we correct that oversight. The Hiyenang Flay asbestos mine, I believe that has been taken care of. The rehabilitation is completed.
Honorable Chair and members, the Hiyenang Flay situation, the department was involved in projects there as from 2005 through the services of a contractor that was contracted by the department. But the Hiyenang Flay situation is seen as secondary pollution, and the mining itself did not take place there in the town or very near the town. But it's a secondary pollution. There have been discussions between our department, DMR, and the Department of Environmental Affairs and also Health. And actually, at the moment, the Department of Environmental Affairs is taking care of that with the intervention and the contributions of other departments like us, DMR, and Water Affairs and Health. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much, colleague. Honorable member, if I may just go back to the issue of the closure certificate, just to reassure you that the MPRDA provides that there would be no closure certificate issued unless the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs, as well as the Mine Health and safety component within the department have given us the assurance that over and beyond our own assessment, they give us the independent and complementary assessment that we can issue that certificate. But also that in the current environment, the determination of the quantum of financial provision is undertaken before issuing the license. And so a mining company would make provisions for rehabilitation. And after it has fulfilled all the closure requirements and we issue that, we then refund them after they have rehabilitated, and all our stakeholders from DWARF and Environment, Water Affairs and Environment, as well as Health and Safety, have given us guarantees that the rehabilitation has been done correctly. Then the original provision is then refunded back to failure to which the money would be used for the same purpose, because the original determination would ensure that sufficient provisions are made. Honorable Sonto, yes, indeed, it has been 5 months since December. The ROC has been really hard at work to ensure that it translates the strategy into an implementable program, as we have started to outline this morning. What I've just realized that I omitted to include in the presentation, and thank you very much for reminding us, honorable member, is the role of the department in educating the affected community, because they need to understand the impact that these mines have on them. We do have it in the document, but I omitted to include it this morning, and we do take that very seriously. The preventative measures to stop another other phase of derelict and ownerless mines, I think in the context of the current regulatory framework, the MPRDA, and what we were explaining earlier, is to ensure that we do not have, in the future, another phase of DNOs, that DNOs stop pre-2004 with the implementation of the MPRDA, because the next generation cannot come back to this parliament and say to this parliament there were regulatory gaps, and that's why we created another phase of DNO, and that is our responsibility today. I think I've covered all of the questions.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable Moss. We did receive an apology. I see you are itching for follow up. Let's give you Honorable Soto and then Honorable Sirali.
On the same questions that I asked, there's one that was not responded to. The one about the previous owners. Yeah, and the measures that would be meted against them, in your terms, they will be called to account.
Can you respond to that, and then we would listen to Honorable Bigani on follow-up questions?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just need to get clarity. Is the member referring to people that have now been traced and what happens at that stage, or what happens to people in terms of the new legislation when there's default?
I think in fact the question is, in you trying to trace the former owners, are there some that you have found? And if so, what responsibility do you impose on them in dealing with those ownerless and derelict mines that used to belong to them? I think that question is two parts. Is whether you've been able to trace successfully some of the previous owners, and secondly, what are you going to do with them?
Thank you, Chair. What is a little bit unfortunate at the moment, Honourable Member, is that the current provisions of the MPRDA, or the MPRDA in its current form, does not make provisions for punitive measures. And that is why in the presentation I alluded to the evaluation of the legislative provisions. And we have an opportunity through the process of amending the MPRDA. I believe we submitted to the program of parliament that, you know, we then create the provisions legislatively. However, we do not believe, again, that this is one of those things that can only be pushed legislatively, and that the issue of environment in this industry has to be understood and is generally understood as the responsibility, the collective responsibility. What I do know is that when the owner is traced and does not have the financial means to rehabilitate, it then becomes the responsibility of state. If they don't have the... I know. Yeah.
I took it from you. You said they will be called to account. Now the question then is how?
Yeah. I suppose the honourable member, that was I was thinking about the post amendment of the MPRDA, which, you know, as part of our implementation plan, is to make sure that we make the provisions to call those who have abandoned their mines to account. By the way, not all of them are not traceable, and not all of them are not financially fit.
That's why, Chair, sorry to you, I asked the question is how many of them are traceable? What are their records? What is their database like? Because I get the impression that if you're able to identify as many as 6,000 mines or plus of those mines, then you can't tell me that you're not working towards concluding work in terms of rehabilitation concerning those 6,000 mines before you can say you can go on. It's fine, I'm mentioning Richards Bay right now, but it's a new area, it's a new era, a new paradigm that you perhaps have to look at differently. And even chance to perhaps add, look at it as an initiative for a state-owned mine in terms of Richards Bay. But now, for the rehabilitation of mines, having the constraints we are having in terms of finances, what is being done, and I'd like to hear what is being done to ensure that work is concluded, whether it's a useful mine or a useless mine, but what is being done by the department to ensure that work that needs to be concluded is concluded within those areas. And I think one of the areas is to actually hit a finger on the stack concerning that so many were able to trace, so many were not able to trace. If you're not able to trace them, what are you doing about it?
Thank you, Honorable Member. At the moment, I'm unable to say, I don't have the statistics with me. I'm unable to give you the figure, Honorable Member, to say how many are traceable or not. But certainly it is an area that that we take at heart, that would be a priority area as part of our implementation plan going forward. I hope it's acceptable to you to say that we recognize the difficulty and the complexity of the challenge, and that we will incorporate that submission in our implementation plan, particularly in view of what I earlier submitted, that we will be looking at the provisions of legislation to ensure that there are measures for us to be able to bring those into account, those that are traceable. But those that are not, as stated, yes, we don't have the funds for rehabilitation. And part of what you submitted earlier, Honourable Member, is the public-private partnerships. And there are opportunities that are also presented by derelict and ownerless mines. For example, I made that example earlier, to say that some of the abandoned mines would have inherent value today, and we do receive a number of applications from new participants who want to extract the minerals, because they now apply the new technology. By the way, none of the old owners can come back and say this was my mineral right, because all mineral rights now vest with state.
You're complaining that you've got challenges in terms of the legislative framework to deal with former owners that you are able to trace. Could the provisions of Section 47 not apply in this instance where a mine used to be owned under X name and it was sold to the newcomers, or it was just being abandoned, but the same company or people would apply for mining rights in a different name? And when you trace, you discover that indeed these people operated
as Fred Corner in this mine. They are now operating as Biga de Sondo in this other mine. There is that, you know, traceable history in terms of the operators themselves. Are you telling me that certain provisions of Section 47 cannot be invoked in that instance, where people, if they are unable or if they do not want to take their responsibility in terms of rehabilitating those derelict mines after they have been traced, therefore their current operations cannot be tampered with? Are you saying that we are so lacking in our legislative provisions that we cannot, you know, invoke such sections?
Honourable Chair, the provisions of Section 47 they relate to rights issued in terms of the MPRDA, and I don't think we can then make that applicable to those people who had rights in terms of previous legislation. So, but through legal services and through some research. I think we can get legal opinions on that issue of holding these people accountable for what happened in terms of the previous legislation. I can just quickly mention that the current MPRDA has a specific section 38(2) that provides that holders of rights, directors, and these people can be held severally and jointly responsible for any defaults in terms of, for example, environmental issues, the current legislation. Thanks, Chair.
I'm posing this question because sometimes it becomes not an acceptable situation where South Africans would have to appeal to the international courts in order for them to get remedies. And in this instance, we're talking of plus 6,000, you know, ownerless and derelict mines that would cost more than 30 billion rand, you know, in your own estimation. And that there are possibilities that some of the former owners can be traced. And then therefore, if they are traced and there's nothing that can be done, what is the reason of tracing them? If you cannot hold them accountable in terms of the current laws. Would you care to respond to that?
Now the issue is, if you have such a situation,
and they are not taking care of it by ensuring that these people are brought to book, if I had to put it that way, and ensuring that whatever comes in out of that is able to go and resolve the problems that we are having in relation, for example, with the asbestos mine holdings in particular. It seems to me the act is there, but it's just there. And at the end of the day, you don't have a situation where problems are actually resolved towards us progressing to ensure that, like you said, there's these holes, the Florida canal that you mentioned, something is being done there, but it's not yet coming back to those who are affected in other areas, what is happening to them at the end of the day. And what is the real purpose of rehabilitating mines if we are going to keep on saying the act says that there's no action taken, and there's no proof of what action has been taken or what has happened as a result of where action has been taken. Chair, I also think maybe I should then add that maybe we should look at a situation where we actually have an opportunity to call this oversight committee. And the oversight committee should actually come and lay out to us as to what exactly are they doing. I'm just afraid of a situation where you keep on saying that you need money, but at the end of the day, when you have to put your mouth where you have to put your, you know what the term says, you actually end up not doing anything at the end of the day, but you keep on complaining that not enough money is coming in. So I don't know how possible is it for this rehabilitation oversight committee to actually send representatives, present us in detail so that we understand what their work entails, and we understand as to how well are they doing their work in actually closing the gaps and complaints that are actually bringing forth the motivation that we should support the issue of rehabilitation of mines. Because I'm starting to think that we should just go straight to state ownership of a mine and move on, if these are then a useless case.
Thank you. I note you, Honorable Soto, but let me welcome Honorable Matibela. We did receive your apology that you would be joining us. Thank you very much. Honorable Soto.
Chairperson, I think the seriousness we put on this particular aspect of accounting involves what in the presentation was said to be people digging holes and leaving them open. That's irresponsibility. And who knows if these people, having left a hole where a child drowned, are re-entering the industry in other names, you know, in other identities. And I am not very, very comfortable, Chairperson, with the people that were talking about remaining enigmas of the industry. If we are saying, as the department, or if the department is saying to the committee, we have managed to trace some of these people, who are they? We need to know so that also it should be an accounting mechanic that they should not, having left mines derelict, they should not re-enter the industry in other identities. I think that's where the seriousness of this emphasis comes in. Thank you, sir.
Would you care to respond to those?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. I will go back, Honorable Bikani, and say that the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee was only established in the latter part of December 2009. It is in its fifth month of existence. And the work that you see it presenting today is the work that it has done in this very short period. And yes, we recognize the issues that and the seriousness of the issues that has been raised, and that part of the work of In terms of ensuring that that we, you know, we are able to at some stage come back to this committee and say, as the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee and the department, this is how far we have moved in that direction. And Honorable Sonto, indeed, we take quite seriously as well the fact that those who have been operating in a manner that is not consistent with the image that we are portraying and contributing to the seriousness, to the growth and contribution of this industry to the broader transformation objective, economic growth, social responsibility, environmental responsibility, cannot be members of this industry. And that is why Section 38 is there in the MPRDA. Thanks.
Honorable Moss, Honorable Lucas, and back to you, Honorable Bigani.
Thank you very much. It's a person I like to say thanks to accept my apology. Chairperson, as the personal people say in the Canada, then I think we must move on the rehabilitation of the mines. Because if people apply for mining rights, then they don't consider they are staying people around the mines. And for the long term, maybe that is my observation. But I think from the slide from page 1 to page 7 is more a background of the work was being done, or where this thing was started to. But I think this is not a constructive background. I have a feeling that if it comes to a serious presentation, you must give a constructive presentation so that you, when you go out here, you really see that things was really happening in the past and it's moving now. As I say, in the business, use the term the caravan was moving. From page 8, Jefferson, I want to say the one that the caravan must move is from page 8, where you're supposed to have your oversight committee, as the Honourable Member Foyt was saying. So one, the committee was really seeing that things are really happening when it comes to rehabilitation of the mass. That's what we want to see. Those people are supposed to be here today, so that we hear out of the horse's mouth what is really on progress on this issue. Jefferson, also, I really, if you talk about on page 9, about 6,505, we must be here for those people who are the oversight committee, who are the, where is the site, how far is it? I know the thing is be approved in December, but at least in the 6 months, maybe at least get a constructive report saying how far they are those in 6 months. And because our president was saying, this term of parliament will be really a vibrant parliament. And I don't think every time is important in life. So I really, in this rehabilitation of mine, really, if you're driving around to different provinces, you really see some person is applying for this money, was mining for many years, but now they disappear and you don't find them everywhere. But he actually benefiting out of the fruit out of that mine. And they are not even from our country, they're from abroad somewhere. And our people is living poor and the health conditions is not even so much better. So thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Lucas.
Must acknowledge that this, most of the problems here have been inherited. And that is what makes it difficult. find. However, we need to look for a way forward. And one of the issues that has come to mind is that there are mines which are derelict, and which not all the goodies have been extracted from, which may be able to be reworked. Maybe the department can look at the situation, maybe a joint venture or something, where the monies that have occurred from the mining will be put into rehabilitation. Because you've got to find a source of where you can generate funds to do the job. So I'm just trying to think of, trying to be getting some ideas of how we can go forward.
Thank you very much. Okay. Can you respond to those so far?
Chairperson, I was still going to go back to the issue of the state-owned mine in relation to the Richards Bay issue. For a debate for us, the members, but also at the same time for the department to perhaps send us anything possible in terms of information of this Richards Bay issue, because I think we have very little information in relation to that. What has been done, what is happening, so that we can be able to deliberate ourselves as to what else can we go into. And then finally, Chair, could this, I hear what the presentation says, but I would still like to request the detailed strategic plan of that oversight committee, even if we get copies in due course, so that by the time we meet them, we at least have an idea of what is entailed in there, taking into consideration the fact that they are only there for 5 months, but we must be able to understand as to what exactly are they doing, what are their time frames, what is their budget allocation, so that we can also further then be able to deliberate on those issues. Thank you, Chair.
I think when you respond on this matter, the Auditor General, in his critical report, made very clear recommendations that currently the department is responding spontaneously to the rehabilitation of mines. And you say that you have a strategy that has been approved by the minister in December 2009. We had expected that your action plan must be based on that strategy. But clarify us, because some correspondence from your ministry indicates that the strategy is still being considered by the cabinet. And something that, of course, we felt it's not acceptable, because issues raised by the Auditor General are very critical. Within them, there are also matters of, communities that are exposed to hazardous conditions. But also within those matters that are raised, there's a court judgment. And apparently the department has been found wanting in terms of implementing that court order. Now, we want to be clear, because if the action plan we are putting before us is not based on that strategy, because it has not yet been approved, then it means you have not as yet responded adequately to these issues that were raised by the Auditor General way back in December. And remember that the strategy, according to the Auditor General, was supposed to have been ready in March 2008, and again another date was given for 2009, and up to date there's no strategy except the one that you are referring to that has been approved by the minister in December 2009, but unfortunately that strategy cannot come before parliament because cabinet has not yet reflected on it,
And if it is so, then it means the action plans that you are putting before us are baseless. And that it means you are undermining seriously the issues raised by the Auditor General. And I think we need to put this factor very emphatically so that we must be understood that we cannot allow a situation where when the Auditor General tables a report to Parliament for us to consider, and when we call on the department, it was in March when you were before us in responding to some of the issues raised in that report, it was work in progress. Now, we had expected that you would have that action plan, and that action plan should have been based on the rehabilitation strategy. In the absence of the rehabilitation strategy, how do you then aim to resolve those matters? Because even on the issue of capacitating the department, this one-man show, the person who has been responsible for issuing out tenders, assessing tenders, adjudicating on tenders, and even controlling finances, and even, you know, doing an oversight and monitoring of the implementation, which means, therefore, that you're in a situation which is seriously not normal. But now we don't see in your action plans, except that committee, the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee that you have established, what more have you done? Is that work still being done by this one person? Even the Auditor General lamented that if this official is not available, then there's no one in the department to see to the work of the rehabilitation of money. And we are talking plus 6,000 sites, and that's quite a mammoth task. And therefore, we need to see. We know you can't come to us by today to say, you know, we've done wonders, we've done half of that or 10% of that. It's impossible. But what we wanted to see, are you ready? What is your state of readiness in terms of responding to those matters? For instance, I'm interested to hear what is your response on the court order that was issued, which was picked up by the Auditor General, that the department, way back in 2006, did not, you know, implement. And then it can't be that the state organ would, you know, undermine judiciary in the country. If there was a court order and we've accepted it, we have not appealed, our expectation is that, you know, corrective measure must have been taken. So I want you, when you respond, put us at a position where we can then feel that, yes, indeed, you are ready to deal with this matter. And indeed, that's why you hear these probing questions in terms of you being able to trace the previous owners. Because we offer very clear view that you are not responsible for this pollution. It is operators who were producers in the mines that are responsible for the air pollution as well as for the water contamination. For instance, in the country, currently as we speak, there's a serious problem on the acid mine drainage. You see, for instance, wetlands, look at the Hoed Vee situation, which is, you know, predominantly in the news now, and the extent that this matter also goes to Orkney mine, where we're informed that wetland is overflowing into the rivers that feed into our dams, for instance, the Olifant River. Now, this situation, if it continues to pose this risk, seriously, we are closely moving towards a national disaster when it comes to water contamination in the country. As you have already correctly pointed out, that we are a water-scarce country, and therefore we cannot afford a situation where the currently available water can be contaminated by activities that are, by their very nature, preventable. So we need to then, with yourselves, to locate these responsibilities and be able to find a solution that would take us out of the matter. Whether it's going to take us 5 years, whether it will take us 10 years, it's neither here nor there. But once we begin, then we're able to move forward. But my worry is, if there is no strategy before us, and you're giving us action plans that are falling short in response to some of the key issues that are raised by the Auditor General's report, we are going to have very difficult in basically
comprehending with what you are putting before us.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think I would have failed in my job today.
With the development of the strategy in the department, with the
within the department that will be dedicated to dealing. You may recall, Chair and Honourable Members, that I indicated that the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee is an interim structure, recognizing that as a department we have been weak with the capacity that is dedicated to rehabilitation-related matters. And that is why this Rehabilitation Oversight Committee is constituted by a number of expertise within the department. Health and safety issues, regulation, policy and promotion, environmental specialists, including the finance and other colleagues. That, Honorable Chair, is part of ensuring that we have a structure as the department. That is part of moving towards the readiness for the department to implement rehabilitation. Whether we have a name or not have a name at this stage, I cannot see how that can be a priority over us having the right model of implementation that will then seek to pursue the names if the committee and the work of the department and affected parties so requires that tracing the names, you know, and making sure that the provisions are there. Yes, it is important, and I'm not underscoring the importance of that. But I think what is absolutely important is, are we setting up the right modalities and shifting from having that one official in the department that deals with this mammoth task to establishing the right structures and ensuring that we have resources that will be able to do all of these things that the honorable members are rightly asking and directing us towards to do. In the absence of that, then we are unable to do anything. And so when we talk about the readiness, I would want the committee to appreciate what has happened since December up to today. And I think a lot of work has been done from December up to today. And I wish to submit to the committee that this work is really dedicated towards demonstrating the commitment of the department towards addressing this issue of rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines.
Say that no velo and can I say that? Oh, okay. No, we hear what the speaker is saying, Chair. They say only when the last tree has died and the last river has been poisoned and the last fish has been caught will we realize we can't eat man. But the bottom line is that, Chair, at the end of the day, work has to be done. There has to be something that shows that something is being done. And I think at least having a detailed threat plan put before us, it will give us a picture of what is being done. Look, there's a department now, a DMR department, the Department of Mineral Resources. That department has got people. That department has got a budget. Whether sufficient or not, the bottom line is that since we were established in 1994, when they were operating as DME, something was being done somewhere. We need to start seeing a sense of progress, a sense of movement, which we can see realistically and practically so. We hear what the difficulties are. We understand the intrinsicness of the work that they do and the demand thereof. But we are theorizing here. There's no practicality as yet of what you can see is visible. We hear what they say on paper are the implementation plans. What we need, I still maintain, is a strategic plan. That's depending in detail, and I repeat, having clear objectives of the key areas that need to be attended to, having time frames, everything must have a time frame. And whether the budget is 10 cents or 10 million or whatever the case might be, are talking about these mine dumps and having to do some form of rehabilitation. Now, for us to get that as reality and to understand the nature of the problem or the extent of the problem, can we just have that threat plan change detail and we take it from there?
Honorable Moss?
Chairperson, I think I get the answer from the department on the point of the oversight committee. I think the oversight committee was for a purpose that on the shortage we have, maybe the Department of Resources and in particular a person who is supposed to be responsible of for to doing that particular part. That's why they are appointing the oversight committee. That's why I was saying that this committee is supposed to be here today. I know there is people appointed for the short time, some December. But I'm glad for the answer, and I see it is saying a lot of work is being done. And that's the work we're supposed to here today. So that we can say from here, where we need to be moving to. I think this is for me, that is key. Because the committee is being put for a purpose.
Thank you, Honorable Soto.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think really we do appreciate the fact that work is being done. But I think the department should equally appreciate the fact that in the preparation for that work to be done, we're identifying gaps. And therefore, those gaps are assisting the department to strengthen on the tools of work that they are going to be using to do this kind of work. It's not to say when presentation is made to the committee, the committee should just appreciate and accept. We are here to see to it that preparations for corrective measures are made on any aspect that are seen to be wrong. And we want to play our role, therefore. We appreciate the fact that there's an oversight committee that has been put in place to look into these issues. Even if it's an interim structure, it should be a strong interim structure. Should not be a structure just for the sake of putting up a structure. I was happy when you said it's a structure that is made up of various sections in the department of various talents. And it's a structure that can secure the needed resources to carry its mandate. I was at ease when you said that. Now, when we identify gaps in the process of executing that mandate, the department should appreciate. I think let me stop this.
Would you want to respond?
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Let me perhaps start by also just saying that we members of the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee are here present, and I am presenting in my capacity as the chair of that committee, Honorable Moss. That the Oversight Committee say that the contribution of the committee towards strengthening the gap is much appreciated, much, much appreciated, and that you would notice that all of us, as you speak, honorable members, are copiously taking notes of your submission, because your contribution really shapes our work. And in this particular case, again, this valuable contribution that you have made, which is highly appreciated, will indeed help us immensely in shaping the work of the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee to begin with, but also on shaping the work of the department in dealing with the rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines. I will also just ask my colleague to demonstrate to you that the work continues to be done. The identification of 6,000 sites is really a result yielded from the work that has been constantly done. So we're not starting from scratch. So for us to be able to get to those 6,000 sites, there is a lot of work that has been done. And also, for us to be able to come to an estimate figure, that is part of the work that we have been doing, coupled with the research and development, as well as ensuring that we have prioritized the sites. Is this work enough, honorable members? I'll be the first one to say no. It's not enough. And that's why your comments are much appreciated and will indeed constitute the strategic document, detailed strike plan document, as Honorable Bikani has asked for, that we will submit to the committee. I also wanted my colleague to just comment on some of the projects that we have implemented over the years, and some we are continuing as we're sitting here to implement. Colleague?
Thanks. Honorable Chair and honorable members, as you could have seen in the presentation by Mr. Musa, since 2000 onwards, the department has been involved in quite a number of projects, and it was basically focused on the asbestos mines. They were, in fact, some of them were rehabilitated prior to 2005, and as from 2005, the department involved a consortium, and they were then tasked to identify some of the asbestos mines, prioritize them, and then a tender was allocated to them. And from 2005 up to, I think it was the middle of 2007, they were involved, and they handled quite a number. I think it was about 13 projects, I speak under correction, mainly asbestos projects. Now, some of them, after the expiry of the contract with the said consortium, then the rehabilitation was not neglected from our department. We wanted to continue with those projects, and through Mintec, which is a state-owned enterprise, through our department, attached to our department, we then entered into a contract with Mintec, and Mintec, in fact, then continued with another 5 projects, also rehabilitation projects for asbestos mines. Now, tenders were then invited by Mintec, and they were approved, and Mintec then continued with the rehabilitation. And currently, honorable members, these projects are in process. There's work done already, quite a lot of work by these people, but they are not done yet with all those five projects. And this is where the department is in respect of that. But the other important thing which I would just like to stress, Jay, is that through research, which the ROC is going to do, we will be able to determine how many of the derelict and ownerless mines are indeed covered by applications submitted so far. Now, to give the honorable members just an idea that we have indeed received more than, and I think I reported on that previously, more than 24,000 applications since the implementation of the MPRDA. So the important part is that, and the big function of the ROC would then be to do the research and find out what is that situation, because that would have a big impact on the estimation of 30 billion. Thank you, Chair.
Foreign members, I think we should step off this situation currently in this following manner, that indeed we will have to revert back to the Auditor General, because they have tabled their reports for our consideration. We won't be able to do that on the basis of the information before us. What we would request from you is, one, to give us an indication when will you be in a position to revert back to us with, one, your strength plan aimed at the rehabilitation of these mines, and two, when you come back, we would want you to take us through the recommendations, the findings and the recommendations of the Auditor General in a pointed manner, as you have done on the 5th of March. I think there's the submission that you have made on the 5th of March, which was beginning to respond in details in terms of those recommendations, but then it fell short because some of the approaches you were still working on. For instance, you were still working on the strategy, even though even then you were saying that it's approved by the minister, but then you were not as yet in a position like you are not today to table that strategy before us, so that we can then satisfy ourselves that your action plans are in tandem with what you're raising in the strike plan. And indeed, the information you have given us today is quite useful, because it gives us the intention of what you want to do in tackling this challenge. But I think, therefore, give us the total package. The strike plan, the direct responses to the Auditor General's concerns, and indeed, your action plan in a complete form. But give us an indication, because the longer, as you have indicated, the longer we delay in tackling this matter, the more possibility that the problem would grow and the cost impact thereof. So we would want to then take your hand, you know, moving forward. But surely we have to make sure that what has been raised by the Auditor General is being dealt with, so that when we revert back to them, we then, you know, give them our decision in the form of the resolution that we will take as a committee. But give us an indication, because we don't want this matter to be dragged for far too long. We're going on recess in the first week of June, the 5th of June, if I'm not mistaken, and we'll be back in the second week of August. Quite some time. But give us an indication.
You don't have to wait until that time. If you're ready with the written information, it can be submitted so that in our plans for the third term, we can then include this interaction. Because the danger we're running is that the Auditor General has already begun to do its second round of auditing departments. If they come to DMR and they find the same situation, the risk is that you will have an audited report with qualifications, quite clearly, because they would be of a view that you have not done enough in terms of issues that they have raised, including this matter. So give us that indication so that we are in a position to then plan accordingly and engage you further. You're not able, we don't want to put you under duress.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, if you may allow me give you a response through the parliamentary departmental processes by close of business on Monday in respect of your request, and thank you very much for the guidance.
Thank you. Is the tea ready?
Okay.
I shall be break for 5 minutes, allow the Chairman of Mines to also get themselves ready in terms of the technical condition.